Morning, Chair. You can start.
No, thank you very much, Mercy. And good morning, honorable members. I'm not sure whether the minister is here, and also the deputy minister, the DG and the team, and our support staff. Good morning to all of you. Can you then, Mercy, flight the agenda of today's meeting?
Okay, Chair. I'm just sorting that one, Chair, if you just hold on. Thank you. Is it visible on your side, Chair?
Yes, thank you very much, Ms. Yeah, that it's visible. Thank you very much, honorable members and the department. This is the agenda for today's meeting with five items. And I will quickly welcome all of you, honorable members and the ministry. And also, I can see, welcome the Deputy Minister, Honorable Dr. Chana Pilani Majake, the DG, Ms. Yuli Somakasi, and the team of the DPSA and our support staff in this portfolio committee. And you are all welcome. And Mercy will then quickly move to the next item, which is apologies.
Thank you so much, Chair. Good morning to you. Good morning to honorable members, minister and colleagues. We only have one apology, Chair, from the members. It's Honorable Malumai. Thank you so much.
No, thank you very much, Mercy. Honorable members, today the DPSA.
Chair, through you, can I then record the standard apology for Honorable James? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ntuli. There's a standard apology of Honorable James Ntshontsho. Honorable members, today the DPSA will officially table the two bills the Public Service Amendments Bill and the Public Administration Management Amendments Bill. And this meeting is the beginning of the legislative process in terms of our responsibility given to us to process the two bills. And then the department today in this meeting, honorable members, will introduce these important key legislations that speaks to the public sector. And then, honorable members, you must then note the important areas of clarity on both bills. And immediately after the presentation, and I will now request that the Deputy Minister, Honorable Chana, because I don't see the Minister, Honorable Kivich, to then do her remarks, and immediately She will hand over to the department for the presentation. And you must note, honorable members, we will not today ask questions for clarity, but we'll note them for the next steps of this process. Thank you very much. Over to you, Honorable Dr. Kana Pilani Machake. Deputy Minister, I can't hear from my side. I'm not sure.
Is it audible now, Chairperson?
Yes, thank you very much.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning to honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, to senior management of the Department of Public Service and Administration and the DG, to the members of the public. Chair, I'm going to switch off the video because I have challenges of reception.
Oh, that's fine, Deputy Minister.
Chairperson, it is indeed a pleasure to present the Public Service Amendment Bill and the Public Administration Management Bill to the Portfolio Committee. And to actually, just before I continue, to say that I am the one that is actually presenting these two bills before the committee because Minister Kivit is attending cabinet meeting this morning. We started this process in 2029, and it has been a long and intensive journey to this day with a lot of consultation. It is our hope, Chairperson, that the bills will enable public service and government to function optimally in a single administration to provide the best possible service to citizens. Also to create an environment that ensures that public service is professionalized and that public servants uphold the values and principles enshrined in our constitution. Ultimately, that the words of building a capable, developmental, professional, and ethical state are translated into action, which is what we've been advocating for all this time. As part of realization of the objectives of the National Development Plan and the professionalization of public service framework, it is necessary to ensure that routine day-to-day administrative powers are located as close as possible to the administration to promote efficiency and expediency in order for government to have high-level performance that we all desire. This will be done focusing on strategic matters such as delivery of government and constitutional obligations by the executive. To provide that the Director General in the Presidency is also part of the intention of the bill, will be the head of public administration in order for the Director General in the Presidency to provide coordination between the spheres of government and support the president. Also to remove any possible conflict of interest that may arise, number one, by prohibiting a head of department and employees directly reporting to the head of department from holding an office of authority in a political party. Number two, by imposing a cooling off period for employees involved in the procurement of services of the service provider. Through transfers, mobility of employees across all spheres of government to address human resource deficiencies where they exist or where operational requirements are necessitates will actually also be improved. Also to improve is to enable the National School of Government to be a training facility that caters for education and training of employees, which is tailored to creating a capable public service. I will now, Chairperson, hand over to the DG in order for the DG to make the presentation on the two bills. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to the honourable members of the committee, the Deputy Minister, and the colleagues from the department. Chair, I think firstly that the minister had apologised for today. She is attending to cabinet, I think. So the office did record the formal apology as well. Chairperson, I'd like to request that you allow permission for the Chief Director Legal, who is basically the technical support who's been running with this process at the technical level, to please do the presentation on the bills. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you, DG. Good morning to the Chairperson, to members of the committee, DM and DG and colleagues. The presentation today is quite lengthy, and I'm going to apologize in advance because it's now two bills and it's going into quite a lot of detail. You'll tell me if the presentation doesn't move, if you don't see it. In terms of the presentation outline, we look first at the context, so what informed these amendments. We also take the committee into the processes that were followed by the department in getting to the bill to Parliament. We also then look in detail at the amendments to the Public Service Act, as well as the amendments to the Public Administration Management Act. So to start with the context, I think it's important to explain how we started this process and why we started this process. In 2019, we initiated these amendments, and it was predominantly around looking holistically at ensuring that the public service operates at a point where the needs of citizens are taken into account, the needs of government is taken into account, as well as how we deliver services and then the employees themselves. So the bills don't just talk about terms and conditions of employees, but it looks holistically at how we better perform as a public administration. The genesis of these provisions arises from the National Development Plan. We've also had changes in labor legislation. We've had changes with policy. We've also looked at and revisited the objectives of the Single Public Administration Initiative, which started years back. We also had a regard to the professionalization framework, which was recently approved by Parliament and Cabinet. And we've also looked at the outcomes of the Zondo report and the commitments that government made in respect of remedial action. So primarily the bills look at creating a public administration that is people-centered, that is working together, that is efficient and effective. We also looked at how we leverage on existing legislation so that we ensure that any new amendments we bring are bringing more than what exists currently in other laws, so we're not duplicating laws. We looked also at how we professionalize the public administration to ensure that the values and principles we talk about in Section 195 are actually realized. And ultimately, all of these changes we are making to legislation, the goal is to improve the state's capacity, that is to improve the employees' skills and their contributions to the state. We also look at the capability of the state. So when we look at capability, we're looking at what are the systems in place, what are the technologies, the innovations, the structures that will enable better service delivery. So that was the context in which we looked at the bills. We started, as I said, in 2019, this process. We finally gazetted for public comment on the 6th of April, 2021, draft bills. We received extensive public comments on both the bills. Those bills were amended pursuant to those comments, and we further consulted bargaining councils, as well as we processed these bills through NEDLAC. And I want to reiterate that the parties at NEDLAC have agreed to what has been finally presented to Parliament. In terms of the processes we followed all of the prescribed processes to getting to Parliament. We've done the certifications and we've done the CS, etc. In terms of the content of the Public Service Amendment Bill, this act was last amended in 2007. So the changes that we are effecting is to take into account all that has happened since 2007 to now. And as I indicated, the National Development Plan policy, et cetera, has informed these changes. In terms of the content, and I'm going to go through it clause by clause and just indicate what changes have been made and what is proposed. So in terms of the definition of executive authority, we are amending the definition, but only to the extent to clarify that the president and the premier exercise authority over national HODs and provincial HODs respectively. In terms of the definition of head of department, we've also amended it to remove reference to acting HODs. It was creating interpretation challenges, and we've clarified that issue and removed that reference. In terms of political office, we've had to insert a definition to support Clause 15 of the bill. And when I get to Clause 15, I will explain the provision itself. But I think it's important to note that when we say political office, we are talking about the position of a chairperson, deputy chairperson, secretary, deputy secretary, and treasurer of a political party in a province or in a region, and any position that's equivalent. And this definition is aligned to what is currently provided in the Municipal Systems Act to ensure that there's a consistent approach in terms of the definition. But I will explain more fully in the context of the actual provision. Clause 2 of the Public Service Amendment Bill speaks to the powers of the Minister for Public Service and Administration. It's referenced to Section 3.1, so it's an amendment there. In respect of Section 3.1, we are amending it, but the content is staying the same. It was just the drafting that that needed to be changed in Section 3.1. In Section 3.7, we have amended the provision, and that's Clause 2 of the bill. We've amended Section 3.7 to deal with the powers of an executive authority. And to that extent, we have defined what the powers of an executive authority are, to the extent that we have located now administrative powers, which previously or which currently under the Public Service Act reside with an executive authority. We are vesting it now with the HOD. So Section 3.7 is the powers of an EA. And we have taken this approach to vest administrative powers with the HOD to ensure that decision-making is expedient and efficient, as the Deputy Minister alluded to. We are also enhancing accountability because both administrative and financial responsibilities will now be located with the HOD. We are also better able to align budgeting processes to human resource matters if powers that are vested under the PFMA are similarly located with the HOD under the Public Service Act. There is also a view that this vesting of administrative powers will also alleviate the conflict and tension that sometimes arises between an executive authority and a head of department, and it's less likely to impact on the administration of the department. But as we do that, we recognize that executive authorities are then able to focus on strategic matters and deal with their constitutional obligations without having to deal with routine daily administrative matters. And further, we reiterate that the head of department is ultimately accountable for the output and the performance of the administration. So that was the premise on which we have now proposed the vesting of administrative powers to HODs. So the amendment to Section 3.7, which is the powers of the executive authority, is to ensure that the executive authority is accountable for the department. The executive authority is also responsible for approving a strategic plan. So you'll see that we retain those responsibilities that are strategic in nature that will guide the operations of the department without necessarily dealing with, as I said, the day-to-day issues. We also ensure that the HOD's roles and responsibilities are aligned with the strategic plan of the department. The executive authority is also required to establish clear relationships and facilitate cooperation, coordination, and communication with the head of department, and will hold the head of department accountable for the administration of the department. And the EA may then exercise also powers and duties that are conferred in terms of this act to that EA. So that is primarily what Section 3.7 looks like. We further go on to look at Clause 2D, which is still an amendment to Section 3.8. What we have done in Clause 2D, it's reflected as a deletion, but we have essentially moved what is contained in Section 2D to Section 3.8. So you'll find that there's a deletion and then an insertion in Clause 3.8. And that power in those particular clauses doesn't change. It's just where it's located in the act now. As we move and powers HOD, and this with constitutionally, an executive authority or political head is responsible for the delivery of government's priorities and for the department. So we had to ensure that there was sufficient checks and balances to ensure that that responsibility was not eroded in any way. What we have done in Clause 2E of the bill is that we have provided that when an HOD fails to fulfill an obligation, that EA may intervene by requiring that head of department to take appropriate steps. And we require that those appropriate steps be recorded in writing. Where the HOD then fails to take those appropriate steps to remedy the failure, there is provision now to refer the matter then to the president or the premier, depending on whether it's a national head or a provincial head, because ultimately, the president or the premier is responsible for that HOD. Clause 4 of the amendment bill talks to an amendment to Section 7.3 of the Principal Act, which is the Public Service Act. And again, it talks to the vesting of powers to a HOD. So you'll see in the presentation, I'm not going to deal with clauses 3, 5, 6, 7, 9 to 14, 17, and 18, because what those clauses do is they just delete the reference to executive authority and they insert the reference to HOD. And by doing that, they're vesting administrative powers to HOD. In terms of clause 4, there's a further amendment to Section 7. And what we have done there, and what the Deputy Minister has alluded to, is that we have clarified what the role of the DG in the presidency will be. And as we did that, we created what is known as the head of the public administration, as is envisaged under the National Development Plan. We have empowered through these provisions the DG in the presidency to be the Secretary of Cabinet, to convene and chair FOSAD, and we know FOSAD comprises all HODs at a national level as well as provincial DGs. We have also created a coordination point for the DG in presidency to coordinate and become a central location point for interaction between national departments, provincial departments, and government components, and also to allow the DG in the presidency to support the president in any matter that the president is requiring assistance with or that the president is empowered under the statute. I think it's important to also note that currently under the Public Service Act, a similar provision exists at a provincial level. So what we have done through this process is we have basically replicated those functions that are performed by a DG in a office of the Premier, and we've now also given those similar powers to the DG in the presidency. In terms of clauses 8, 9, and 13 of the bill, as I said, you'll see the numbers are missing, but those are the ones where the vesting powers for HODs was. So in terms of clause 8, we have, during the amendment of the, or during the enactment of the Public Administration Management Act in 2014, the amendment, the Public Administration Management Act, which is PAMA, repealed section 15.1. What we are doing in this bill is we are bringing back section 15.1 and we are putting it into section 14A. And that is simply to ensure that any employee who is appointed from an organ of state into the public service has continued service. It was something that was not recognized during that process, but we are correcting that to ensure that there's continued service, which is currently still a provision in the public service. In terms of clause 9 of the bill, we are amending section 16, and it's a simple amendment. There's a term officer used. We're just replacing it with employee because employee is defined. In clause 13, we are amending section 31. Again, it was just a redrafting exercise. There was a cross-reference that was wrong, and that was picked up by the Law Reform Commission. There was also referencing to the Public Service Commission and the Constitution, which just needed a redraft to make it in line with drafting procedures. In terms of Clause 14 of the Public Service Amendment Bill, this seeks to amend Section 32. The amendment seeks to clarify the issues around reassignment of employees. This is what we usually regard as an internal secondment. So it's employees within the department that are moved within the department itself. And what we are saying is that the executive authority of that portfolio may reassign a head of department. The head of department may reassign any other employee. And the reassignment may only be within the department. We've had to clarify this because the provision itself was being misconstrued to be a secondment outside of it. In terms of section 14, or in terms of clause 14B, we're then amending again part of section 32, which deals with the acting appointments. And what we are clarifying there, and these are not the exact provisions, but this is the essence of the provisions, is that acting appointments can only be made in respect of employees within the department. So you can only appoint somebody within the department to act within the department. You can't appoint somebody from outside the department to act in the department. So it was just for clarity. We've also clarified who has powers to appoint acting officials. In terms of posts that are currently occupied, we say that it's the incumbent of that post who can appoint someone to act. And if the DG feels that the incumbents should not be appointing those persons to act, then the DG may determine a different process. So we've built that into the provision. In terms of vacant positions, we are providing that the executive authority of that portfolio may appoint an employee to act in the vacant post of HOD after consultation with the president or the premier, as the case may be. And HOD may then appoint any other employee to act in any other vacant post. So in a post of level 1 to 15, the HOD is responsible for that acting. In terms of clause 15, we are amending section 35, and this is simply to provide that the Minister for Public Service and Administration will be responsible to determine the grievance procedure that will be applied for when employees lodge grievances within the department. The Public Service Commission, on the other hand, will continue to regulate and provide processes for when employees refer matters to the Public Service Commission. In itself. So we separate the role of the commission and the public service. In terms of clause 16, we are now inserting a new clause 36A or a new section 36A into the act itself. And we are creating a prohibition on HODs and employees reporting directly to HODs from holding political office. And this provision is trying to synergize with what is contained in the Municipal Systems Act. Hence, the definition of what political office means is aligned to what is in the Municipal Systems Act. What we have done in this prohibition is that we have limited the prohibition to the top two layers of government, to the extent that it's a prohibition that applies on HODs and employees reporting directly to HODs. And we say those persons can't hold political office, which again is the definition that you see on the slide and which is in clause one. And we do this to eliminate any potential conflict of interest. So insofar as the HOD has now administrative responsibilities, and financial responsibilities, and those, and the HOD can delegate it and usually it's limited to the top layer of government. We have looked at that in respect of the conflict of interest that may arise if that particular person or those particular persons hold political office. And therefore, we have created the prohibition, those persons holding political office. In terms of clause 18, we are amending section 38. Section 38 was declared unconstitutional, or at least part of section 38 was declared unconstitutional by the Constitutional Court. This provision under section 38 currently refers to the ability of the employer to deduct monies from an employee's salary. And currently the provision reads that that can be done unilaterally. The Constitutional Court has declared that unconstitutional because it determined that that was an unfettered power that the employer had. So we have amended those provisions to ensure that if there's going to be a deduction of overpaid salaries, that can only be recovered by way of consent from the employee, and in the absence of consent, then through legal proceedings. We have also provided that an employee who moves to another department, the old department can still seek to recover that money through processes through the HOD or the new HOD. So what we are saying is that it's either consent or legal proceedings that will allow the deduction of monies. In terms of clause 19, and that's section 35 of the Act, we have clarified, it's clause 19, which amends section 42A of the Act. We have clarified what is meant by minister and deputy president, and we've replaced those words with member of cabinet. So what the provision allows is for the president to delegate matters relating to the appointment and career incidents of HODs. And it currently reads that the president may delegate those powers to a deputy president or the minister. The confusion used to is currently that minister there refers to the minister as defined in the Act, the intention of the Act was actually to allow a delegation to any member of cabinet. So we are correcting the reference. Then in terms of the Public Administration Management Amendment Bill, this is the initiative that sought to give effect to the Single Public Administration Initiative. Initially, there was a process to have a single piece of legislation that governs the entire public administration, including local government. What we have done since then is that we have retained the separate legislation. So there is the Public Service Act, there's the Municipal Systems Act, and there's the Public Administration Management Act. And what we have done through the Public Administration Management Act is to regulate matters that are transversal in nature, but are not regulated in other pieces of legislation. And as we do that, we look towards a single public service, but it will require us to use existing legislation to find alignment where it matters are already regulated in other pieces of legislation. In terms of clause one, again, it's about definitions. We've inserted a definition for head of institution. The primary or the principal act didn't have a definition. So we've inserted one. We've also defined what is meant by the Labor Relations Act and the Municipal Systems Act. And we've also provided for better definitions for national government component, organ of state, organized local government, and other definitions that will assist with interpreting provisions of the Act. In terms of clause two, we are proposing an amendment to section 5 of the PAMA. Section 5 deals with transfers. What we are doing in this process is that under the existing PAMA, the intention was to repeal Section 14 of the Public Service Act and replace it with what is now in Section 5. But as we went through the process of trying to implement Section 5, there were challenges in terms of its implementation, hence the amendment. What we have done through this amendment is that we have retained the powers under Section 14. So you'll see we have reenacted Section 14. And we have amended Section 5 of the PAMA to now only deal with matters where employees are being transferred between the public service and a municipality or between municipalities. We are not regulating transfers within the public service. We are leaving that back in the Public Service Act. And again, as the DM said, transfers are essential to be regulated or at least enabled across government to ensure that we can move resources where they are needed. The important thing to note is that as we have done these amendments, there is a requirement that if an employee moves from the public service to a municipality and between municipalities, the consent of that employee will be required. In terms of clause three, which talks to secondments, secondments is currently regulated in Section 6 of the Primary Act. We have inserted the words operationally justified to ensure that when secondments happen, they must only be because they are operationally justified. In Clause 4, we have dealt with the transfer of employees upon transfer or assignment of functions. This is currently a provision that exists within Section 7 of the PAMA. We are proposing a repeal of Section 7 in its entirety because it is conflicting with or it's creating difficulties because some of these matters are regulated under the Constitution, some are regulated under the Municipal Systems Act. So what we are proposing is a repeal of Section 7 to allow it to continue to be regulated by the other pieces of legislation. And we are reinserting the repeal section of Section 14. So we're reenacting Section 14.4, which will deal with functions, transfer functions in the public service. Clause 5 deals with Sections 8 of the PAMA. What we are doing here is clarification amendments. So there is a reference to the state in Section 8 of PAMA. And you'll find that in other sections, there's reference to organ of state. So we are amending the word state to reflect organ of state. And we have defined then what an organ of state is so that it's consistent throughout the Act itself. We have also clarified what we mean by director when we say an employee is not permitted to be a director of a company doing business with the state. So we've clarified what director means. We've also clarified some unintended consequences of the provision that exists. And as we did that, we clarified that employees who are appointed ex officio on boards are not acting contrary to Section 8. What that basically means is that if you are employed in the DPSA and you are required as a responsibility of your job to be a representative on a board, that cannot be construed as doing business with the state. So we clarify that. We also empower the minister to determine that certain transactions between the state and the employee are not construed as conducting business with the state. There's a list of examples, but the first one that comes to mind is a teacher who marks exam papers. That action can't be construed as doing business with the state, because if you do, then you're not going to have exam papers. So it's matters like that that needed attention, and we needed to have a provision that created some sort of latitude. Clause 6 talks to a new provision that we are inserting, which is Section 8A. This is a provision that seeks to prohibit any employee who was part of a bid process or a tender process where work is awarded to a service provider. If that employee was involved in any way, whether it's setting of criteria, evaluation, adjudication, signing a SLA, if they were involved in any of those processes, they are prohibited from accepting employment with that service provider or any gratification from that service provider for a period of 12 months. The provision also seeks to place an obligation on the service provider not to employ that employee. So whether the employee leaves the department or continues to be employed in the department, this provision will apply. This provision also creates a penalty, which is a criminal offense, as well as a fine. So we are criminalizing that. In terms of Clause 7, which is Section 9, amending Section 9 of the PAMA, we are clarifying a definition that's there. Again, it was just a redraft of a provision that already exists. So we are just clarifying that special advisors will also be part of the requirements to disclose financial interests. In terms of clauses 8 to 9, this is an amendment to Section 10 and 11 of PAMA. And this talks to your capacity development provisions as well as the National School of Government. Clause 8 amends Section 10.2 of the Act, which provides that a department must, within their available budget, provide for compulsory training that is directed by the minister. So this will allow the MPSA to direct on compulsory training, and also for departments to then find budgets within their budget to ensure that training is provided. The National School of Government, we are amending the provisions in Section 11. So the current public administration management that was passed in 2014 created the National School of Government as a higher education institution. We have not been able to bring that provision into operation because of many difficulties, both in terms of financial as well as resourcing, as well as the impact it will have on the public service. So what the proposal is now to the amendment is to create the National School of Government as a national department. So it's to retain what the National School of Government is currently configured as, and to empower the National School of Government to provide education and training of employees to all spheres of government, including municipalities and including public entities, if public entities request. The National School of Government, as I said, will also provide the compulsory training. And there's provision also for the National School of Government to provide programs and courses and to issue qualifications, etc., all subject to, of course, the NQF. Clause 10 is a repeal of Section 12 following the amendment of Section 9 because it's no longer a higher education institution. Section 12 becomes redundant. Then Clause 11, we are proposing an amendment. There is a requirement that before mandatory training is determined by the minister, it needs to be consulted with Cabinet. We have removed the responsibility to consult with Cabinet. It just creates an unnecessary burden on Cabinet to be consulted in that process. In terms of Clause 12, we are dealing with a repeal of Section 16.2. Section 16.1 allows the minister to issue norms and standards in respect of, amongst other things, the promotion of values and principles contained in Section 195 of the Constitution. With the repeal of Section 16, we are saying that that determination of norms and standards will follow the normal regulatory process. Because currently Section 16.2 says if the minister wants to set norms and standards in respect of values and principles, there needs to be concurrence from every EA. And every EA means every municipal manager, every MEC, every premier, every minister. So we've taken the very onerous provision out, and we've said the setting of norms and standards in terms of 195 will be done through the normal regulatory process, which is already stipulated in Section 18 of the Act. In terms of Clause 13, again, it's a minor amendment. There's a reference in Section 17.7 to the the Office of Standards and Compliance, and he talks to its members. So we are taking the reference of "and its members" out because there is no definition of that, and there isn't any clarity on what is meant by "and its members," because functions are located with the office itself. Clause 14 seeks to introduce two new provisions, which is Section 17A and 17B. Section 17A seeks to create a provision that will remove unfair disparities across the public administration. So the proposal is that there is a process that is put in place for the minister, after consultation with the relevant ministers responsible, to prescribe norms and standards to establish upper limits of remuneration and conditions of service for employees who do not fall within the scope of a bargaining council, and to prescribe steps to remove unjustifiable disparities amongst employees in and across institutions, including public entities. I think what needs to be clarified is that we recognize that all these different spheres of government, all these different institutions are different by nature. So there will be disparities. What the provision is doing is it's trying to remove unjustifiable disparities. So where the disparity can't be justified for whatever reason, then that disparity should not exist. In terms of the new insertion for Section 17B, we are seeking to provide for mandating arrangements in the public service that is more coordinated. And what we are doing in that provision is that we are suggesting that the coordination of mandating processes for collective bargaining in the public administration, and this includes public entities, we provide that no employer may enter into a collective agreement without a mandate from the Committee of Ministers. And we define who the Committee of Ministers is, and that includes all relevant ministers from sectors, the Minister of COCTA, the ministers of public entities, et cetera. We also, and I apologize for the typo, we also provide for an intergovernmental forum to be established by the Committee of Ministers, which will also include SALGA, premiers, deputy ministers, to ensure that such parties are consulted in the processes. We have also clarified what we mean by conditions of service. So we are not saying that all matters need to come to the Committee of Ministers. We are saying those conditions of service as we define, those matters must come to the Committee of Ministers and they must have financial implications. So if they have financial implications, then it must be consulted here. The idea is that the Committee of Ministers must take into account affordability and any other factors that are prescribed by the Minister in consultation with the Minister of Finance. The idea is ultimately to ensure that there is deeper coordination and fiscal prudence when it comes to conditions of service and matters related to the state and its resourcing. Some of the principles that we've adopted as we've engaged through this process is that there was understanding that this provision does not seek to undermine the LRA or any other collective agreements, and it does not interfere with any existing collective bargaining structures. So your PSCBC, your SALGBC, the responsibilities of institutions in those processes remains. All we are doing is strengthening the state's ability to coordinate itself and manage its finances across public administration. The next amendment is on Clause 15, which is an amendment to Section 18 of the Act, which basically is the ability to make regulations under the power. And what we are saying in this process is that we are saying any regulations that need to be made insofar as it affects municipalities must be done in consultation. That means with the agreement of the Minister of COCTA, as well as the Minister of Finance, and after consultation with organized local government. Currently, it requires also the agreement of organized local government. But through this amendment, we are aligning what is currently in the Municipal Systems Act, and that requires consultation only with organized local government. Clause 16 then amends the schedule of the PAMA, which was the laws that were repealed. As I explained in the previous slides, we are re-enacting Section 14, which deals with transfers within the public service. So we are retaining what's currently in Section 14. We are also amending Section 22A, which then deals with also the Committee of Ministers. Because we are regulating it within the PAMA now, we are amending that particular section that also creates a Committee of Ministers within the public service. With that, I thank you. That's my presentation.
Very much. Ms. Naidu, this is the presentation, honorable members. And in my opening remarks, I've said we must note all important issues for clarity for the next process. So I would invite the minister. Okay, just for the deputy minister, I see that of honorable Ndoli.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings to everyone. The meeting and all protocol is observed. Chair, I'm still observing your order not to ask questions. I am not asking any questions, but I wanted to welcome the presentation of the bills by the department. And it shows that the department is really hard on work for it to be able to pick up all these gaps that they are filling in this amendment. Thank you very much. It is so informing. Moving forward, we'll be able to seek those clarities and comments as you alluded to, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ndoli. Over to you, Honorable. In fact, if I can start with then the DG and then yourselves, Honorable DM.
Chairperson, I lost you a little bit, so I'm not sure what your expectation is from my side currently, because we will be guided by the process of the committee. But what I can only assure the committee members is that indeed we are ready as the department to provide the support and whatever data that is at our disposal as part of the process to support you as part of engaging in the process that Parliament is going to be involved in terms of taking the two amendment bills forward. So we'll be ready from our side, and we're looking forward to this particular process and the support that we have to provide. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, DG. I wanted the last statement. Thank you. Honorable Diam.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to just say that the two bills, the Public Service Administration Amendment Bill and the Public Administration Management Bill, both bills are being presented to the Portfolio Committee for processing. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable DM, and for you and your team, and you are released, you will proceed with our second item as the Portfolio Committee. Thank you very much for your time, and thank you very much for your detailed presentation, and we'll see each other along the way as we start this process of introducing these bills to the relevant stakeholders. And now you are all released. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Goodbye.
Thank you, Chairperson. Bye-bye.
Masi, the next item in the in the agenda is the consideration and the adoption of the oversight report for the Northern Cape and Free State provinces.
Yes, Chair, that's the agenda that we're going to check in now. I will just request Mr. Ngobe to go through the report, then I'll cover the minutes, Chair. Through you, Chairperson, thank you.
Ngobe or Ngwepe?
Ngwepe, Chair.
Ngwepe, yes. Mr. Ngwepe?
Yes. Okay, thanks, Chairperson. I hope you can be able to see the report. I don't know if you members can see the report.
Yes, Mr.
Ngwepe,
we can see it, Mr.
Ngwepe.
Thank you very much. You can see.
Okay, no, thanks, Honorable Chair. Good morning once again, and good morning to the Honorable colleagues. Here is the report for the Portfolio Committee. As you know, that we have been in the oversight on the 1st March. Okay, you allow me, like it's a standard procedure in the committee, that I just moved slide by slide quickly, because it's quite a luminous report. I think it's up until it's 39 pages. So I'll just move quickly where members, they've noted the maybe spelling errors or sentence not making sense, then they will just stop me up until we put to the deliberations or to the recommendations, Your Honorable Chair, through you, Chair. The first page is just the introduction of the report. With the introduction and then the objectives. And then here is a reflection of the members who attended the oversight for all the days. I'm on page 5, honorable members. Page 8. Page 10. Page 9. Page 12. Then page 17. Anything on the first aid size visit? 19. Observation, Chair, I would also request that through you, honorable members, that I will just move slowly but not to read bullet by bullet, but I can only do when it comes to the recommendations, if that's allowed, because there are a number of observation and key findings. But what this key is the recommendation of. Recommendations, Chairperson, the first one is 6.1, of which is a recommendation related to the Department of Public Services and Administration. So we are saying that the DPSA should consistently monitor and assess effective implementation of approved SDIP to be in line with the departmental annual performance plans. And the department, the DPSA should intensify its effort to address identified bottlenecks concerning the SDRPs and ensure resources are allocated to this activity. 6.2, the DPSA and COCTRAN government communication information should complete a long-standing matter of dealing mobility and ensure services come closer to the people. And all three departments must have funded by February 24. And 6.3, the Department of Public Service and Administration, the National Treasury, and the Department of Communication and Digital Technology should engage the State Information Technology Agency on the system downtown to continue to serve departments into for not providing services to the clients. The department should reconsider reviewing precautionary suspension measures on non-criminal cases to second the .5, the Department of Public Service and Administration through the Technical Assistance Unit and the Public Service Commission will consider intervening in the Free State province regarding high misconduct case experience in the province. And the Department of Education and Health should be assisted regarding prolonged disciplinary cases. With regard to the National Department of Health, the National Department of Health and National Treasury in collaboration with all provincial departments of health should organize a workshop to explore various mechanisms on payments of creditors in the health sector. A high percentage of invoices paid after 30 days emanated from health. This needs to be taken before service provider with obvious subject department to litigate. 6.7, the Department of Health should frequently monitor service delivery improvements and develop improvement plans. And we've got the one for the National School of Government recommendations for the National School of Government. NSG should be approached by the affected departments to offer strategic planning programming courses to ensure that officers were well capacitated when drafting plans for the government department. The National School of Government, in collaboration with DPSA, should then compulsory training and development courses for all human resource practitioners in order to improve human resource management practices in the public sector. Recommendation to the National Treasury reads as follows. 6.10, the National Treasury should develop an electronic invoice tracking system to track all valid invoices to avoid departments defaulting creditors and to provide credible information for reporting purposes. And the recommendation on the department is in order to ensure efficient with regard to the Northern Cape province recommendations, the Northern Cape Office of the Premier should ensure stability for accounting of its deposits by ensuring employment, agricultural, environmental, development, land, and reform. Since these departments were without permanent department for a longer time. Consulting with regard to the approved lifestyle audit guidelines, the Northern Cape province continues with its effort to develop provincial lifestyle audit guidelines by involving relevant law enforcement and the stakeholders to assist the process with the aim of upholding corruption in the provincial administration. The Northern Cape province should develop provincial lifestyle audit and in collaboration with the Department of Public Safety. Lifestyle of guidelines with the aim of improving already developed guidelines. These are recommendations for the Provincial Department of Home Affairs. The Kimberley Office of the Department of Home Affairs will be provided with additional human resource capacity to cope with a number of groups of citizens requiring workers releases, and office space should also be prioritized by the workers. Should continue the mobile track or office and visit annually for registration of AD or learners, which result in the reduction of long queues for workers. With regard to the Department of Health, the Robert Mangalis Clinical Tertiary Hospital should urgently by the in order to improve quality health care for the Northern Cape city. And Robert Mangalis also the tertiary hospital infrastructure should be given agent to improve its outlook and for safety of patients as well as staff members. 6.18, the committee recommends that shortage of clinical professionals, such as specialty and medical doctors, should be attended to by both provincial Department of Health and then 6.9, laundry service of Robert Mangalis Hospital should be provided locally, sourcing laundry service from Argentina, which is 409.6 kilometers away from Kimberley. The hospital should consider maintaining its laundry service to or outsource it to local business or military. Free State, with regard to Free State province, the Free State Provincial Department speed up the recruitment process at the Department of Police, Roads and Transport, and the Department of Sports and Arts and Culture. And with regard to the Free State Provincial Department of Health, the Department of Health is urged to apply with to avoid high activity on the outer years budget. And then these are the recommendations. National and Provincial Department of Affairs, the Free State Province, together with the Provincial Department of Home Affairs, should be sending another safe at the center to avoid overcrowding events in Home Affairs and with Home Affairs in Brooklyn. 6.23 recommendation follows both below Nomi and Tamil hospitals have a shortage of talent. The vacancy rate was high, requiring the attention of provincial Department of Health and National with regard to 2024, the Department of Health should strengthen management in the tertiary hospital in order to stabilize the hospital. 2025, security should be given a priority by ensuring that CCTV cameras are working, that security officers are what relevant since they were exposed. 6.8, the Traffic Department Center appointed should be appointed security officer. And security officer working in most of government departments are with but the province should be ranked for that. And Honorable Chair, the end of the recommendations for the oversight report for the National Education State.
No, thank you very much, Mr. Mwepe and the team. Honorable members, this is the report of the oversight visit in the Northern Cape and Free State. And there are key findings and also the observations. And as the last of the presentation were the recommendations. So I will then request that honorable members raise their hands to get clarities, if there's clarities, or comment, if there's comments, and also edit to the report. I know that many of us were in them in those two provinces yourselves. Honorable members, I'm taking hands. I only see one hand of Honorable Ntuli.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, let me first thank the support staff for the good work that they've done in compiling this report. I missed something. There was a call here that disturbed me. I don't know whether it was that time. Remember, Chair, we went to Itusong Center. I didn't hear anything, not unless I missed it. And there were some problems there in terms of funding. That's one. Chairperson? Other than that, I would love to adopt this report, except if there are members who wants to add on the traffic and Ntontoni, the traffic department in Free State, because I had already left that time. But other than that, Chairperson, I would love to adopt the report and comment the good work that they've done. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ntuli. I don't see further hands. And I will then assume that honorable members are comfortable with the work of our team. And as such, I know Honorable Ntuli have also, adopted the report. And then I will only request that we get a seconda to the report.
But Chair, I missed the Tucson part. Can Mr. Ngwepe help me?
Okay. Okay, Chair. I think the point where we made that the Department of Fisheries and Administration and the culture and government in communication was include the process of, because there is the process of the location of the future centers, which then impact on the funding of these centers, because no, among all these three departments, there is no any department that they want to take ownership in terms of the location of the tuition service center so that they can be well funded. Or the we have made the recommendation. We have made a recommendation that I think 2.2 that they should complete this, and then we are saying they should report to the committee by February, meaning in our program come then in February, then we would want to get a clearer update with regard to the name of the repositioning of the vision series, of which then covers almost everything in the funding and human resource. So I think it's covered in 6.2 on that million on that set chair.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Come back.
Thank you so much, Mr. Ngwepe. I'm honorable members. The report has been moved for adoption by Honorable Ntuli. I will request a hand to second Honorable Ntuli. Honorable Maneli and Honorable North Nahal.
Good morning, Chair. I can second this document. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The report as presented by our support team has been adopted and seconded as the true reflection of what we've overseen in the two provinces. Thank you very much. The next item, Masi, is the consideration and adoption of minutes. Can we then start with the first set of minutes, Masi?
Yes, Chairperson, thank you so much. We have about four sets of minutes, Chairperson. I will try to go as slow and quickly as possible, Chairperson. The minutes of the, these are the minutes of the 29 November, Chair.
Okay.
Yes, so you can see. Okay. Now up, we've got minutes of the 23rd, Chair. On page one, Chair.
See it, Masi.
Okay, Chair. I'm on page two, Chair. Page three, Chair. On page four. These are the minutes of the 3rd November, Chair. I think we had with Northern Cape, and also we had with us Public Works.
Okay, thank you very much, Masi.
Those are the minutes of the 23rd, Chair.
Yes. The minutes of the
23rd November, Chair. 2022.
Okay. Honorable members, the minutes of the 23rd November has been presented. Any take to the minutes? Honorable members?
Well, I can't see.
Okay, just hold on, Honorable Nduli. There's a hand of Honorable Manel.
Thanks, Honorable Chair, and greetings to members of the committee. Chair, I will move for adoption of those set of minutes.
Thank you. And a seconder to the adoption of the minutes, Honorable Members.
Manduli seconds, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honorable Manduli. Minutes has been adopted by this committee. The next set, Masi.
Thank you, Chairperson. These ones are 29 November, Chair, 2022. These ones was when the committee received an ATC to fill up the vacancy, Chair. We had to urgently just call a meeting to adopt the program and the advert, Chair. On page one, Chair. On page two, that's the last page, Chair. It was a very short meeting, Chair. Those are the minutes of the 29 November, Chair, 2022.
Honorable members, the minutes of the 29th of November 2022 has been presented. Any takers to the minutes, comments, edit or questions, honorable members?
Chairperson, honorable Notnagel here. I remember that day the meeting was short, but I had problems connecting. Is there any possibility for me to make an apology now, or is it too late? I remember that day. It was a short meeting, but I had load shedding problems, if possible. Thank you.
So can you repeat the last statement, Honorable Notnagel?
On the minutes, it shows that I didn't make apology, but I remember that day I couldn't log in due to load shedding, and I remember it was a short meeting. If it's possible that my apology can be accepted, thank you.
Okay, Honorable Julie.
No, Chair, I was on the minutes. I think maybe the Masikian guide in terms of what Notnagel was saying. But for me, I wanted to move for the adoption of the minutes. But I understand that there's that matter from Notnagel.
Okay, Masi, do you want to say something on what have been raised by Honorable Notnagel?
Yes, indeed, Chair. Those minutes are the reflection of what transpired on the day. But I think, Chair, it would be best to say that we know that. I will then be in a position to speak with you on privately, Chairperson. But however, those are the minutes that are reflecting what transpired on the day, Chair. We know what Honorable Dr. Notnagel is saying. Honorable Assistant Chair, thank you.
No, thank you very much, Masi. You have assisted us. Honorable Ntuli have moved for the adoption of this minutes. Any seconder? Honorable members, Ma'am, Honorable Julie have adopted the minutes, and I'm requesting that honorable members raise their hands for wishing to second Honorable Julie.
Are you still there?
I'm still here. I'm waiting for one Honorable Manelli.
Chairperson, I can't second this minutes because I was absent in that meeting. Probably those who were part of the meeting can then second the minutes.
Yeah, can I check something, Chair?
Yes.
I wanted to check something, Chair, because that time you were not the chair of this committee. If it's allowed for you to second the meeting, but I'm checking because I don't have any clue, as now we are the chair.
Definitely, Honorable Ntuli, I wanted to second, but maybe because I'm sharing now, can Masi or Mr. Ngwepo or Mr. Biela advise if it's in order of myself seconding these minutes?
It's in order, Chair.
No, okay, which means then, honorable members, I second these minutes as the true reflection of the meeting of the 29th, because I was part of that meeting as an ordinary member of this committee. Thank you. The next minutes, Kumasi.
Yes, Chairperson. Now I'm on the minutes of the 15th of March, Chair. That was our first committee meeting, if you remember, Chair, that we had to have a subcommittee beginning of the year up until we had finalized it. This was our first committee meeting, Chair. I'm on page one. Page two, Chair. I remember this one, so we had to request TPME to go back because they had submitted the presentation late, Chair. So it's a three-page minutes, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Masi. Honorable members, the minutes of the 15th March 2023 has been presented. Any take from yourselves, honorable members? Honorable Nduli?
Chair, I move for the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you. And seconder? Maneli? Honorable Maneli?
I second, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honorable Maneli. The minutes of the 15th March has been adopted by this committee. Thank you. The next set, Masi.
Okay, Chairperson. I now going to submit the last one for the meeting, Chair.
Thank you.
This is 20 April, Chair. These are the minutes from emanating from the subcommittee, Chair. It was the adoption of the report, Chairperson. So I'm on page one. This is the minutes of the subcommittee, Chair. Page two, Chairperson. Page three, Chair.
Chair.
Chairperson. They meet the subcommittee, Chair.
Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Masi, for the presentation. Honorable members, then, now the minutes has been presented. I'll take hands. I can see your hand, Honorable Kondo.
Chairperson, I see Honorable Shriver's name on the minutes, but he wasn't part of the subcommittee. I was.
Oh, thank you very much, Honorable Kondo. It will be corrected, Masi.
Yes, noted, Chair. I've just picked up that one as well, Chair.
Okay, sure. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. And then I'm then taking hands, Honorable Members, to adopt the minutes of the 20th April, which is the subcommittee report that we presented to this committee. Honorable Kondo, can you then lower your hand if you don't have further issues? Honorable Nduli?
Chairperson, I was part of this meeting and I want to move for the adoption.
Thank you, Honorable Ntuli. I don't see any hands from honorable members, and I will second this report as the true reflection of what was presented from the subcommittee process to this mother committee. Thank you very much. I think the last item is number five. Masi?
Yes, Chair. Checking in. Yeah, Chairperson, can you hear me?
Yes, I think the last item was it's number five.
Yes, Chairperson, it's closure of the meeting, Chair.
No, thank you very much to the honorable members in the platform. And thank you very much once more to the team of this portfolio committee. Your steering work, irrespective of our challenges, but you are always available to support, guide the portfolio committee. So I'm saying to all of you in this platform, now the time, it's 6 minutes past 11, and that will be the end of this portfolio committee of today. Thank you very much until we see each other in the next meeting. Thank you and goodbye.
Amanda, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Recording stopped.